Laying into the movies. Hey girl, curl up on now with our smooth pod. What you just wanna know? What's on our mind? How do we think it goes? So plug in those headphones. It's late to the movies.
Let's just get into it. I don't have we were talking about taxes. This was the intro now. Who knows?
This will play hot. Everyone's going to be jacked up about this.
It's a hot open. We're coming in hot. Welcome back to the podcast. We are burning up on reentry into our content. Anyway, as you know, I don't know how to start the podcast. So it'll either be, I don't know what this is anymore. Or something along the lines of welcome to Late to the Movies. My name is Ben Holt. This is a podcast where my friends and I get to fill in our movie blind spots. Each week, we'll pick a film that either I or a guest hadn't seen before and really should have by now. This week, our second episode in one night only month, all April long movies that take place in pretty much in a night. Of the 50-50 so far in actually just one night. But hey, every movie so far has been within a 24-hour period, so I'm counting it. This week, we're doing Cabin in the Woods. I dropped the because it's cleaner, but I think it's technically The Cabin in the Woods from 2000-something by some guys. And I have it all in front of me. It's fine. We'll get there. Your guest left right across the podcast dial. We got, actually, for some reason, he's in a different spot every time. Craig is first on my screen.
Craig.
Likewise. And then Bree's here.
Hello.
And Sam's here.
I was going to do a Voz bit, but forgot. So, Cabin.
Yeah, I guess I don't know what line would make sense from this.
What's
Bradley Cooper or Richard Jenkins says, probably.
The Bradley Cooper? Bradley Whitford. Yeah.
No, this was Bradley Cooper in this
one. Oh no. Was it like the Adam Scott bit in season two of Wet Hot American Summer where you just got a nose job?
Yeah. Okay. My bad. Yes. Bradley Whitford, who I love. He's in this film.
What was the director? Oh, sorry. But what was the director's line? It's like, we work with what we got or something like that probably would have been the best line. Anyway.
The director, yeah, Sigur Rooney. That's a blank check bit. They always call her Sigur Rooney.
That's really good. I was gonna say, Sigur, you just come up with Sigur Rooney off the top of your head.
No, that's them. Okay, yeah, let's get into not the movie yet. It's The Cabin in the Woods. It's one night only. I don't feel like I really need to explain the theme as much this month as the last couple. But anyway, that's what it is. That's what the movie is. That's who your guests are. So let's get into it. Have you guys watched anything good recently?
Brie?
We watched Lisa Frankenstein the other day. And what a ride that movie is. I loved it. I described it as like Heathers meets Sweeney Todd. And it's basically if Heathers, but if Veronica like actually wanted people to die. It was great from beginning to end. Like what? It was just outlandish. It was written like a fanfic.
Speaking of written, does that mean Diablo Cody back?
I hope so, because this was great, and I would love to see something else like this.
And I think this is the debut from Zelda Williams in the director's chair too. So okay, yeah, I really wanted to watch it. It was in theaters for actually like a good chunk of time, but I just
It's on. Peacock right now, I believe it is. Okay. It's free on Peacock right now.
I'm a Peacock subscriber, so I'll get on that.
Yes, it's a pretty quick watch, and it's just fun. Like, it's just a good time. It's outlandish.
101 minutes, which is the perfect time for a movie. We did a Carpenter movie last week. All of his best movies are right around 100 minutes, so that's my favorite runtime for a movie.
Yeah, I think we watched it, like, before work.
I can sleep. So nice. I mean, it's not a horror movie, so I was gonna say let's wake up and watch a horror movie. It's horror adjacent, but certainly not scary.
Yeah.
For other movies, I finally finished all the Predator movies with Prey. What a good movie Prey is. Oh, Prey's my really goodness. Good. Prey ended, was amazing. Ending on
not the highest note in the series, but definitely a high note for that series, mm-hmm. I would, in the last 20 years at least.
Yeah, it was, like, I had fun with a lot of the other ones, a lot of the other entries, but, like, for, like, actual good movies, it's definitely the only other good movie besides the first one.
Yeah, that's really fair. Yeah,
it's, like, legitimately it's
fun movies in there.
Yes, right? Exactly.
So what's your Predator ranking? if you haven't had time to think about it, it's fine.
I do have all of them rated. But I think I still have the first one, the highest, though Prey might be on equal footing. I love Alien versus Predator, the first one, if you count that.
It's fun.
Yeah, I loved how fun that one. It's not good, but it's a very fun watch. Hated Requiem. I could barely even see what's going on. The Predator is completely average. And then what was the other one? Predator.
Predator 2 is
oh, there was a Predator 2. I didn't see really that one.
So but you yeah. haven't seen all the Predator.
No, I have. I've seen all of them. I just didn't super like the second one.
Yeah.
Requiem was probably the worst. That was a terrible movie. Not even fun.
They've got the Predalien and it should look cool, but they don't let you see it.
Yeah. But yeah. And then the only other thing of note, not a movie, but related to movies, is that I'm completely caught up to all of the episodes of Chucky.
Okay.
It comes, season 3, part 2 comes out on Thursday. But I am finally caught up in the show, and it is such a fun watch. It is it's not something that I could recommend really to people that like aren't a fan of like all of the movies, because there is references throughout the show that reference all of the movies, all 7 of them, particularly like the last one, that like the last 2 movies are direct-to-video movies, which they shouldn't have been because they're great movies. But specifically the 7th one is like very heavily referenced. So it's definitely a show that Don Mancini was like, you gotta love the movies to really get this show. But it's a great watch. It's very funny. One of my favorite scenes that I've mentioned to so many people, and if you're not scared of Chucky, I definitely recommend at least watching the clip, is that someone gets beheaded, and then the head just rolls to the front of the stage when the person's supposed to like be announced to talk, and then Heads Will Roll by Yeah 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 starts playing.
Wow. Well done.
It's well such done. A well-written show.
That's fun. Sam, anything you want to add? I haven't really watched anything, so otherwise we're just going to the movie.
I'm in like prime WrestleMania wrestling brain rot right now. So unless you want me I can talk about my favorite video packages.
Like I said, I haven't really watched anything since last recording, so let's just do it.
All right.
Cabin in the Woods. I watched this when it was in theaters. Me and my sister had gone to an event that I don't think exists anymore called the Wine Riot, which was a traveling wine festival that, I mean, as you can guess, you were just trying lots of wine. By trying, they gave you a glass, and they're like, yeah, just, you know, get a little bit, swirl around. They had buckets to spit stuff out. I don't think anyone did. So it was lots and lots of wine. And then we bought some cheese and then wandered over to the Boston Common AMC and took in Cabin in the Woods. And being like a little bit wine buzzed middle of the day, it's a nice, you know, it's like a beautiful spring day in Boston. It was just the best possible, a word that I thought I was going to have a moratorium on this month, the best possible vibes. great. Just good stuff. I had a good time and I've watched it a couple times since then. How about y'all?
I watched it, I think like on demand or something, the same year or so it came out, but I don't think I had seen it since.
I would not have been allowed to see this when it came out. I would have been just a hair too young. So I just saw it like the other day.
Nice. Good. Then we can continue the podcast. It's a 2011 late festival release, spring 2012 is when it actually was in theaters for people to see. It was feeling like a 1 minute plot summary.
I could probably swing a 1 minute plot summary.
All right. I hope it's meta.
Oh no. Okay. Got to rethink this whole thing.
No, you don't have to. It's fine.
All right. Start the clock.
Okay.
So the cabin in the woods is accompanied, is traveled to. Oh, full verbs are hard. By five people who all kind of, as we learn, are like stereotypes for the horror genre. And then we find out that it's a slasher that's basically being curated by a government entity around the world that's trying to placate ancient gods that definitely aren't just hysterically standing for somebody. And they're all trying to save themselves. I think like three of them die. Bunch of horror tropes happen. They invade that thing. They hit a comically large button that fucks up an entire thing downstairs. And this is very, yeah, and you get it. Everyone gets it. It's done.
Oops, all references.
Yeah.
How meta was that? Oh, man, I can't. Oof. Sorry, bars there. Just killing all the meta references.
Bars. Yeah. It is oops, all references. I was trying to remember what the horror themed serials were, like Boo Berries or whatever, because that would make sense. It's about the seriousness that it takes all the references in. So I don't normally mention movie posters, but I feel like this poster is so seared into my mind. The sort of Rubik's cubed house floating in the tagline. You think you know the story. I've always really, really liked that poster. It's probably the reason I wanted to see the movie at the time. I think this is like a few months before Thor comes out. So the only person in the cast that I knew of like the five archetype young, hot college students was, honestly, probably the Fran Kranz, because he was in Dollhouse, I think, as far as like other Whedon properties go. And that was the most, and I mentioned a few months before Thor came out because Chris Hemsworth is in this also. Yeah. The older people though, Bradley Whitford and Richard Jenkins in the control bunker, they're doing their thing too. And that's how the movie starts. One of my favorite title drops. It's really good.
I spent most of the title drop. We're talking to Brie. It was funny because I was talking to Brie and I forgot how the jump scares came up. And I remember being like, I know there's one jump scare and it's like tongue in cheek jump scare. It's not a real jump scare.
Yeah.
I was like, but like, I don't remember because they're talking very softly at the beginning of the movie. I don't know if that's done on purpose. But she's like, can you turn it up? And I'm like, I'm wary to turn it up because I forget how loud the upcoming jump scare is. And I didn't realize this, but she was looking up on like, what's the jump kind of like to get it to help me. I wasn't like one of those things where I was like, oh, definitely look it up, you know, like right now. But unfortunately, she spoiled herself for the title card bit, which I thought
it was still a very good bit. Like it was still very funny when it actually happened.
Yeah. Just to office worker shooting the shit.
Listening to me?
The world building doesn't go too deep, but it gives you what you need and it establishes the frame of the satire. It's like you said, being controlled by this seemingly semi-governmental operation, the corporation or the company or whatever they sort of ominously refer to themselves as, and that's sort of just sort of a touch of satire. It is all you kind of need to establish what they're doing. We're making fun of the horror archetypes this coming, what, about 14 years after the first Scream, something like that. And yep. Kind of doing the same thing, except for all horror movies through the early thousands. If you're counting the quick flashes, especially to Japan.
Yep.
there's been speculation of what the other ones mean. I think the one that's Sweden or which whatever the Scandinavian one is, it's like, yeah, it looks like it's probably like a troll sequel. But that's about it. Anyway, and of course, by which I mean World Tour and, you know, Poppy and his friends.
Yeah, you gotta get that JT song in there.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, all that to say, what do you guys think of this? If this was maybe the first time you returned to in a while for Sam, and obviously the first time for Bree. Any just initial impressions to sort of, you know, focus our conversation?
I, having not seen it for a while, I think my brain when I was 21, when this movie came out, was much more like id based in watching my content. So like, even though I knew there were references, even though I knew there was satire and stuff, it was kind of just like understanding what satire actually was kind of weirdly going over my head. I'm like, oh, of course, satire, you know, like that thing. Sure. Where,
yeah.
But like watching it now, realizing kind of what the state of, I'm not a horror fan, but obviously I'm aware of like where horror was as a genre at the time. We lost Bree again.
Yeah, okay. She'll come back.
Maybe this will stay in. We'll have a bit where we keep talking about it. She cares so much about the horror genre in the late 2000s. She doesn't want to hear about the satire.
She's pulling a Fran Kranz and we keep thinking she's dead.
She's
going to save us.
She's going to hit somebody with a shovel or whatever. Yeah, a bat. I don't remember. Anyway.
I think it was his bong thermos.
It was his bong. He keeps hitting people with his bong. But the satire like of this movie specifically on a whole genre, I think made me kind of enjoy it more than I remember liking this movie. I remember being crazy about this movie. I would say I'm still not crazy, but I think I probably would bump it up like half a star than I would have like when I watched it for the first time.
Yeah.
I loved this movie. I love horror comedies, specifically because I love meta commentary on horror, because horror is a ridiculous genre inherently. Like there's been so many studies and stuff also on just like the campiness of a lot of horror. And so I love when there's satirical horrors that do a lot of references and just comment on how ridiculous the genre can be. And it was just such an absurd movie, and it was so fun to watch, like just beginning to end. I don't think there was a bad scene in this movie. Everything that pops up is paid off, even if it's in a dumb way, but like it, I don't think anything is shown that doesn't have some sort of payoff. Even like all of the things that are mentioned on like the whiteboard as a bet, those all show up or are at least mentioned in some way later. It's just a great movie.
Chekhov's Merman. Yeah, that was
one of the best ones. Yeah,
I have thoughts about Chekhov's Merman. Not necessarily the Merman, but we'll get there.
I agree. So it's interesting. When I watched this for the first time, I wasn't as I was about to say steeped in horror knowledge, which then I just thought in my head sounded extremely stupid.
Like a tea. So,
yeah.
What would that tea look like? Let's get into the visual there.
It's definitely green, but not like a matcha, but like gross.
I like to think that something that's not actually considered horror gets like spewed out like halfway through while you're getting tipped down.
Yeah, and now I'm thinking maybe there was someone on the board called like the steepers, and they would be like lowering the kids into like boiling water. Yeah, like
the kids are bound and they're getting dipped like face first into like goop something. That'd exactly. be fucked up. Surprised fucked we didn't up. See that.
Yeah, the lake starts boiling or something. Yep. I don't know. But and all that to say, so the first time I saw this, I wasn't as versed in horror just because I've mentioned before, I only really got into more horror movies in the last few years, grew up a coward and a big chicken. And my sister doesn't like horror at all. But I think the draw was it was an interesting poster, and we thought it would be funny in a style that in 2012 was extremely appealing, which is to say Joss Whedon's style of humor, who co-wrote this with the film's director, Drew Goddard. And I think that was what more appealed. Now watching more things, I realized watching this time, this is the first time I've watched this movie since actually watching all the Evil Dead movies. I just knew the general, that's the main reference point for the cabin, for the trapdoor into the basement thing. That's really all you need. All that to say, I think that's probably Drew Goddard and Joss Whedon's experience with horror also, because even though it stays really surface level, it's more about just critiquing archetypes in lazy Hollywood filmmaking more than it is very specific niche horror references, which I think helps it be a little bit more appealing, a little bit more universal too.
Right.
Yeah. Because it's more like, you've seen a still of Pinhead from Hellraiser. Here's a guy that kind of looks like that. He doesn't necessarily do like weird sex stuff to someone, so you don't even have to know that's Pinhead's thing.
Just the little puzzle that he's holding, and then his general vibe is all you really need.
He's got some kind of puzzle box. He's got stuff sticking out of his head. That's all you need.
It's interesting with this. So I haven't watched Hellraiser. Is there any puzzle box thing in Hellraiser?
Yes.
Okay.
The rest of configuration, right? Is the thing.
The rest of them all made sense because you have, you know, she like Jesse Williams is playing with the music box at the beginning, and they show, you know, the ballerina girl, and the merman thing they pay, or they don't pay off, but they reference immediately. And then I think the only other thing other than the box was the necklace for the bride thing. And even though they don't pay off the bride thing right away, by the point that she figures it out, I think it speaks for itself. Like, you can imagine just a ghost bride type sitch. But yeah, no, that was the only thing that, like, obviously looking at the puzzle puts it together for her.
Wait, the necklace thing?
In the beginning, when she's in I was kind of vaguely referencing. In the beginning, when they go down to the basement and they have all the activation items.
Yeah.
The other girl, the blonde girl's putting on a necklace, which is ostensibly going to summon whatever. It was like, they actually do show it in The Purge. It's like, she's like a demon, like, wife witch, I think? I kind of forget. It's hard to explain. She's wearing like
She just looks like a normal woman to me, so maybe you're projecting with the demon witch.
Maybe I'm mixing her up with the actual, like, soul stealing witch, and it's like
there's a jumble at a certain point.
Yeah,
that it doesn't give you a lot of time with each character to take in their whole thing.
Oh, that's funny. I just typed "bride cabin in the woods" is just a bunch of weddings in the woods at a cabin. Like,
just trad wife.
The bride is not shown at any time in the film. The only way we know is she exists because she's listed on the whiteboard or wedding dress. This is on the fandom page.
And there's also the fandom page is a fucking mess because there's also like, I don't know if it's like a published novel tie-in or just some fanfic, but
does everything. And they start talking about it like we all know what this is.
Exactly.
I remember that because they have the Sin City reference. Thing. Yep, exactly. That was exactly what I read too.
Because there's something on the board that's just Kevin, I think.
And then in the fanfic or whatever, it is Kevin from Sin City, who's Elijah Wood's character, who's just a glasses serial killer.
Right.
And I'm like, that wasn't in the movie.
No, it's not in the movie.
Lockett would have summoned the werewolf.
Interesting.
Makes sense. Yeah, there's and that's also, it's funny, those fandom pages, because I've gone on them before to be like, oh, what did each reference mean? And then it's like, this one means that one. And then all the comments are like, you're just making shit up. How do you know that? That's bullshit.
Also, if you go on, whoever
put that fandom together just gets roasted in the comments on every page on it, which is pretty funny.
If you go on fandom on your phone, you can read like one line at a time because of all the ads that they have.
Yes. And all the pop-ups, it's impossible to use.
Anyway,
we can go sort of in plot order if you want, but I think we don't necessarily need to. They're doing archetypes, but probably good to get to, like, that sets up the kids, and they're already starting to feel the effects, you later find out, of the chemicals that are being pumped to them. The pre-med student is becoming the dumb blonde. Chris Hemsworth is becoming a sort of jerk jock figure. I do like one thing I hadn't noticed before is like the sort of, this isn't what you hold on to know this guy's not actually a dumb jock, is he's saying like, oh, don't read that book, you should read this one, then you'll be ahead of the course that you're taking on Russian psychology or whatever it is. But the book he picks up to recommend is from her bookshelf. It's like a book she already has. which I hadn't noticed
before. Up on that's very good.
Yeah, which is like, yeah, I think she's aware of it.
Beginning of this movie is so good. I like just the small scene when they're in the room before they're setting out is technically just how this movie just slides by passing the Bechdel test. And just because the two girls talk about hair dye for like 2 seconds and they're both named and the movie can't really happen without them. So it passes the Bechdel test just based on
there
that.
There you go. Yeah, because our main character introduction is that she was the affair partner of a teacher at the school that they are at, and which is obviously, you know, defining the character in relation to a man specifically sexually, but also important because then, you know, Sigourney Weaver's line about we work with what we get, yep, about, you know, because she's doing the virginal final girl archetype is what she has thrust upon her.
But she's not named, so she doesn't count in the end of the movie.
That's true. The director, yeah, that counts, right?
They do have a scene in the middle. I don't want to keep jumping around, but just for the virginal archetype thing, she does like have like a line where she's like, "I've never or whatever" to Jesse Williams. Jesse Williams is like, "It's okay." So like, I do wonder what that's supposed to be referencing, if it's not that she had banged. But I guess it's supposed to just be vague for the payoff of the final line anyway. But it might just be something going over my head.
I don't know what you mean.
Oh, so when they're on the couch and they're getting, yeah, like, so Chris Hemsworth is, and what's the other girl's name? I forget. I can't remember her character name. Jules.
Yeah.
Anna Hutchinson, according to Wikipedia. But I don't know her from anything else. They're getting murked in the woods, and then it's like cutting back to Jesse, yeah, Williams and Kristen Connolly having like a flirt on the couch, and I, mm-hmm, believe they're like making out, and she says something like, "I just want you to know that I've never," and she like trails off, and then Jesse Williams says like, "Oh, it's okay," you know, or something like that.
Yeah.
But, like, I guess that could just be like, yeah, hooking up with a friend, you know, like,
I always took that to be, but then she catches herself and like corrects. She's like, "I don't mean never." I think that's just like, cause they're pumping up the chemicals so much that she,
oh, okay, that makes sense.
She briefly is like, "Oh, I've never," she starts to say that she's a virgin and then is like, "That's wrong. Why do I think
I'd missed that part of the scene. I guess I played that off in my head as like awkward, like, you know, yeah, like fumbling for the right answer stuff and not the chemicals getting pumped in. But yeah, I'm bad at watching movies sometimes.
Yeah. And the only one, and then he starts wearing glasses and having a book in, yep, his hand as, yep, it goes on, because he's the nerd, even though he's explicitly like a football player.
And,
you know.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll get to, I'll say other things about that scene, but we should start going.
Yeah. It's not specifically that scene because it's a cutback when Fran Kranz is leaving, but they're making out on the couch when he walks by and says he's got a husband's bulge, which is really funny.
Which you could just see Joss Whedon cackling to himself as he... it's a good line, though. No, it's Brie, because she was reading... oh, what's that site that you put the reviews on?
Letterboxd.
I couldn't think of it. I needed some fish oil today. But the Letterboxd reviews had like a husband's bulge for this movie or something like that, and I was like, that line is simultaneously horrible and also really good. Like, it's,
yes,
Brie hates holds husband's bulges. She is,
yeah.
She said she didn't even touch it this time, and I don't think she means the husband's bulge. Okay,
I hope not.
I gotta look for that one.
Let's focus on this.
This will be great when my mom listens to this podcast.
Anyway, putting a line in the sand. Do not read the Latin.
Do not read the Latin.
That scene's great. We should focus in on that. The harbinger on the way out at the gas, yep, station is good. All the archetypes, they get to the cabin. They're having, you know, a fun, sexy time.
What direct reference was the harbinger to?
I think just that character in a lot of movies. If we're talking specifics, I would say maybe Friday the 13th.
I haven't seen Friday the 13th. Brie, have you seen Friday the 13th?
I have not, actually. Not the original. That's another series I've been meaning to go entirely through.
So the first one, there is a very explicitly a crazy old guy who shows up like 4 different times to just be like, "Don't go to Blood Lake. You're going to die." And they're just like, "Crazy old guy, how'd you get in here?"
Why are you in my fridge? Get out of here.
Yeah. No, it's literally like it starts in town before they leave town to head out to Camp Crystal Lake. And then he shows up like on the side of the road, and then literally they're at the camp and he's like in the pantry of a building in camp, and they open the door and he's like, "Don't come here. Why'd you come here?"
That's actually very funny.
So that, as far as movies we've done, is the direct harbinger that's appeared. But I think it's like that's more of an archetype-y sort of in a lot of these things. There is an old guy who has to tell these kids because then they've transgressed. And because then they've done something stupid against a warning.
The speakerphone bit was a very good kind of time capsule. It's weird because I feel like speakerphones still exist, but I don't feel like kids are putting each other on speakerphone like they might have back in the day as pranks.
It's also a bit that Tony Stark would do in any of the Avengers or Iron Man movies, and is just like, this is where we were at the time. I love Rian Johnson, but it's also the bit from the beginning of The Last Jedi with Poe and Hux.
Yep.
Anyway,
that was a weird intro, but yeah, no, they're all coming from the same style of writing, so it makes sense.
This was comedy in big budget movies, and it wasn't stale yet in early 2012. This is, I think, April 2012 is what, a month before the first Avengers movie comes out, maybe.
Oh, we looked this up.
I think Avengers is 2012. I could be wrong by a couple years, honestly, but.
I think it is within like a year or so.
Yeah. May 2012. So this going wide in April 2012, this movie. Anyway, good couple months for Chris Hemsworth. I'm thinking the first Avengers was a little bit more successful.
Just a bit.
Yeah, it sounds about
that. That is kind of crazy. It feels weird that he's in this movie, I will say, in hindsight.
Yes.
At the time, it made a little more sense. But
yeah, he's good in this, though.
Yeah, no, he does.
Funny thing is, I could have easily seen this be Chris Evans, too.
Yeah, they kind of both. I don't see Chris Hemsworth doing an American accent that much, so that's also fun. He's usually either doing the Thor accent or just being Australian.
The Thor accent?
The Thor accent.
It's sort of, his
actual accent?
It's sort of a pan-European accent,
I think. Yeah, like he's just kind of... Really? He doesn't use his actual voice for Thor. He's kind of like...
Really? I thought that was just his accent, because I've heard him in other things, and he's just Australian.
No, he's kind of doing like a... I came from...
He's kind of doing a voice, but I don't think he's doing an accent.
That's just spot on Hemsworth right there. That was
I think if you've seen him in the trailer for Furiosa, the upcoming Mad Max prequel sequel, he's doing like an over-exaggerated Australian accent because it's a Mad Max movie, and I like to think that that's his real accent, and he's finally getting to do it.
Yeah.
So the archetypes that they set up are, we already mentioned, like the final girl virgin. Fran Kranz is the fool, which in this time period translates to he's really into weed. There's the jock, Chris Hemsworth's character, the nerd, and the whore, I think, is specifically the type that Sigourney, yeah. Sigourney Rooney references.
2011, so yeah, makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. I wanted to couch that in not my word, her words. But it's, yeah, that is pretty much what happens in these movies. Those are them. It's funny though, because I think in the main reference point for Cabin in the Woods, Evil Dead, especially Evil Dead 2, I think, oh my God, I forgot his fucking name. Oh, come on. Bruce Campbell.
Yeah, Bruce Campbell.
I was just going to make a joke. I think Bruce Campbell is all five of those at different points in that movie. Anyway, he's great. All that to say, that's good, right? We like it.
Yeah, no, I think it plays. I think it's easy to put, like, even if it's not from each movie, you can like take, like when Franz Kranz showed up, I was like, this is Jamie Kennedy. Like, it's just easy, like, slam dunk. You know who it is. He's a little more weed based.
Yeah.
But
But yeah, I do think it's kind of funny, like in like you said, like as the pheromones start coming in to influence their decisions because they're trying to get them all into a bad situation, like it starts making Jesse Williams way more smart than he, or like acting way more smart than he was previously.
Yeah. It's nice. It's subtle how they do it. And I like that. I forget if this is headcanon or just this is stated in the movie and I missed it this time. It's that Fran Kranz has too much of a tolerance for weed. So yes, that's why it doesn't work on him all the way.
Weed saves lives. Moral of the story.
Exactly. And it does seem like they just picked a group of students that were just too smart. It worked on most of them, but it almost didn't. And it was specifically his tolerance for marijuana that kept him alive.
And finding a microphone in a lamp.
Yeah.
Or camera, rather.
His stuff is all so good. I think all of that still plays so well. Mm. And some of the bits that it sets up are great too, when he's just when he's thinking of, you know, outside himself, he's hearing the voices before he finds the camera and he's like, what the fuck's talking? I also like when they really crank up the pheromones right after, I think it's Chris Hemsworth that's like, we should stay together. It's dumb to split up. And they crank it up and he's immediately like, we should split up.
Cover more ground.
Just like, what are you talking about? That's dumb. But then stuff starts going wrong and they all split up and the doors close behind them. It's just good shit.
So just to get quickly into the underground portion, shall we say. So sure. They're kind of jumping back and forth between I don't know if they're actually a government entity, but they run like a government entity where they're like, it's almost like a Men in Black, wearing white, like
definitely level. Is, right.
Like an underground, what's it called? Deep state.
Deep state conspiracy thing where they're all desensitized to the murders because they've been doing this for years and they know that they're doing it to save the world. So they don't really care. And like, you're also like mirroring like horror production companies are obviously killing people, but they're not real. So they don't care. You know, there's like, oh, what a cool scene. We really got that guy murdered. But the one thing that I thought about like French horror style later was that they have a comment early on where they're like, Japan's never lost or so, like Japan's undefeated or whatever, and it's like, yeah, but we're in second, you know, we've only missed a couple times, which basically means that because Japan is advanced in our day cycle, like in our time, Japan gets the beginning of the day before us. I believe part of this has to get completed before midnight or at least before the day's over. There's an ambiguous
With it being Evil Dead thing, I'm assuming it has to be done by dawn.
Yeah. That means that Japan finishes successfully, and that the U.S. is still killing people. Like, the U.S. is like, oh, I guess we can still kill these people. Like, it's kind of nuts to think about it from that side.
Yeah, it's a momentum thing. They have a whole betting pool. I think it's like, they're not that in control of all the creation. So I think once it starts, it sort of just plays out the way.
Yeah. And you have the four kind of bit like people in different states where you have the two main guys that are very much like, this is our job and we're completely indoctrinated by the process. You have the chem department lady that's like cynical about the whole thing, but she has basically just given in to the situation because it makes it easier to give in to than fight it. And you have the new guy who's a security guard who is calling out all the fucked up stuff amongst, you're killing five people and you're betting on it and you're having a party.
Screenwriting 101.
Yeah, it works.
The outsider is the audience proxy.
Yep. There's not really an audience. Well, I guess you don't really need an audience proxy in the actual cabin people, but.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because there is not just an implied meta layer, but literally people also viewing the movie as the audience is viewing it and commenting on proceedings.
Yeah. And they do slow burn a lot of the information, you know, like I think Brie speak for herself, but I know Brie was like kind of asking questions at the beginning, just like, is this like what are they doing this for? You know, it kind of like if they beg those questions until they are just discovered by the kids. I guess that's the audience surrogate side of the kids, is that the kids figure out why the government side is existing slowly but surely.
which Bree figured out chaotically early. I think you figured out the ancient stuff within, like, you're like, oh, are these just ritual sacrifices? Like, we're 30 minutes into this movie. How did you
get? Yeah.
There's stuff that implies it, like, especially, like, the, as, like, when the first death happens, there's the blood that fills in the outline. True. Something like that. That's very ritual sacrificey. But
yeah,
there was things at the beginning, like trying to piece together things. I'm like, this seems like the most likely that it would be that would be it. I don't think I expected like the ancient ones ending, because it was just such an absurd thing. I thought it would be like something like, oh, maybe it's going to end up where like they think there's gods that they have to do this towards. Mm-hmm. But no, there just was.
Yeah, they go full Lovecraft, deep wounds on it. Yeah, and I think also, yeah, right before Jules dies, and that's when they're talking about nudity, and the guy's like, "What the hell?" And I think Bradley Whitford says, "We're not the only ones watching," stuff like that. Got to keep the customers happy, all that. All that obviously thinly veiled satire, but also implying that there is some greater thing that they're serving with all this.
Do they require nudity for the setup? I forget if that was like a thing.
And there is a lot of focus on they have to transgress to.
That's right.
Before it happens. Like it's part of it.
Yeah. The audience would not. I'm sorry. The ancient ones would not approve of just good people getting killed.
Right.
Just why the virgin can live or die.
Yeah.
Sorry, I guess pull back the curtain.
Yeah, I don't know what that says about reading books for the nerd, because all he does is just chill. But
yep. Yeah, he smokes weed a lot, so I guess that, remembering back to the 2011s when smoking weed was a sin.
Yeah.
It's another character.
Yeah.
Oh, the nerd. The nerd, yeah. I was thinking socially.
The nerd also like almost always has to die in horror movies, though, for some reason, but
yeah,
just if you're following the archetypes.
They're really forcing him into a nerd archetype. He literally catches a football in the middle of a street in like five minutes into the movie.
Yeah,
I know that's exactly. Hard. I know, that's I part know. Of it.
That's the point. They work with what they got. But it's all good. Doing all the twists and turns of it isn't necessarily, necessary. But I'm assuming if you figured out what was happening 30 minutes into the movie, you knew the heroic, music swelling, epic leap across the canyon by Chris Hemsworth was going to end poorly.
Yeah, they show the bird running into the thing, so I'm like, that's definitely going to happen to someone.
Yes. That's a great bit.
The funny thing is, like, if it wasn't for that, he probably would have made that jump. Like, that was some air.
Incredible air.
He gets incredible air off of literally no ramp whatsoever.
It's a flat jump.
Yeah.
Like, he should be plummeting immediately. He's on a very heavy, non-aerodynamic object.
There is, like, I don't know if that was supposed to be part of it, because, like, Jesse Williams is, like, obviously trying to be like, I've done the calculations, like, type stuff. Right. Like you're going to have to hit it with all you got or whatever. But it's like, I'm looking at it, it's like, this is, like, Evel Knievel would probably say no to this with a motorized an actual motorcycle. And not to mention, like, again, there's no ramp. There's no world where this would work. Like,
no, you'd be immediately falling. He would,
I'm surprised they didn't even just have a natural ramp, but that might have been, that might have just been filmed on a location. So,
I just think it adds to the absurdity that, like, he actually did get air and probably would have been able to leave if it wasn't for that meddling wall.
The music's, The music's so good, and then
great scream by the main girl too.
Yes,
like, you really feel
that one sticks in my mind. It's good.
Yeah, that should be super funny, but that scream kind of brings you back to the this is a really fucked up moment for.
No, it's still
kind
of funny.
It is. It's almost like the equivalent. I know we talked about this last episode, but the Titanic donk, like, it's kind of has a similar feeling.
The amount of times that Hemsworth's body impacts the mesh wall on the way down, that you can see it lighting up.
Yeah.
It's good. I think that's actually something that I forgot about the movie, is that there is a lot of times where it gets not necessarily serious, but a lot darker and not necessarily comedic when they're, rooting for the nudity to happen.
Yeah. You guys disgust me. Get out of here.
Yeah. Yeah. And a couple other times where they're, you know, a lot more solemn about it. And there's a tinge of pathos maybe among the workers who, like, oh, you realize all the partying, the gambling, all that stuff is more just maybe to distract themselves from the horrific stuff that's actually happening and giving themselves some distance from it emotionally. They don't hit that too hard, but that it feels like that's in there, which I appreciate.
Yeah. I know we both really enjoyed the scene that was the when so Jesse Williams gets killed by getting stabbed in the back of the neck, and because Marty, is that Frank Cran's name?
Yeah,
Marty
we haven't kinda, said yet.
Yeah, Marty gets dragged off screen by a zombie, and you assume he's killed, but no body law comes into play. But the final girl is basically, they say, it's like, oh, she doesn't matter, because like the bodyguard guy's like, oh, we, you know, like, there's one left, why are you guys celebrating? And they're like, oh, it doesn't matter if she lives or dies. Like, you know, like, it's, and like they have like that quick little thing where Bradley Whitford's like, man, I don't know why, but I'm actually cheering for this girl. And then someone comes in with tequila and they just start partying, and while they're partying, she's getting horrifically attacked and assaulted, like, in the background on all the monitors, and they're talking about very like people are trying to flirt and stuff, and she's getting attacked with a bear trap, I believe, on a string or something.
Definitely died. Like, I know, like, theoretically, like, in that moment it wouldn't have mattered, but like, that attack should have definitely killed her.
She took blood like halfway through that fight. I'm pretty sure if you don't get medical attention, like, oh, what's the Brooklyn Nine-Nine line? They say all my bleeding's internal. Joke's on them. That's where my blood's supposed to be.
But yeah, I think it's just another one of those tropes where, like, you can get stabbed a million times, but the plot armor's too thick, so you just live.
Exactly. Yeah. She mentioned that another Whedon company player, the guy that plays the intern, is also a similarly annoying and kind of shitty character in Buffy.
Yep.
Anyway.
Also, speaking of shitty Whedon, I noticed this. Whedon wrote this, obviously, did not direct it. And because of that, when they show a girl's feet, she has a little bit of shoes on instead of bare feet. So good job, Drew Goddard, in insisting on that.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, I think the best example of that is the really famous continuous shot from the New York fight at the end of the Avengers, where it's like Hawkeye shooting a thing, Hulk smashing, and then Black Widow just has bare feet and just hanging out for a while. And you're like, and this is the longest segment of this continuous shot. It's she just keeps weird.
Flexing her toes. On
Yeah. Okay, I guess. Anyway, that's the only, I was going to say, that's the only bad thing about Joss Whedon. Anyway, everything else we approve. No kidding, not even as a joke.
I can excuse sexism, but I draw the line at foot fetishes.
Yeah. So all this is going on, and I think we're just about at the point Fran Kranz comes and saves the day with his bong, which is made out of some incredible material, because it's able to fend off the chain bear trap. And
he got that bong from Wakanda, I'm pretty sure.
Smacks the guy in the head with his vibranium. All the Avengers references we can fit in this one. And they'll probably cut a lot of them out. They go downstairs, for lack of a better term. They get into that freight elevator. The zombie hand is in there, too. Kills the guy. And it's a good bit of just sort of unraveling everything. And I like sometimes taking a look at the timeline and in literally like pulling, you know, hitting pause to see how far we are into a movie, because I feel like what you think about if you've already seen this movie is a lot of what happens from this point, but there's really only 20 minutes left in the movie from the time they get into that elevator, and they go down and they start seeing all the different monsters, and it starts kind of slow. And then there's the zoom out where you can see all of the boxes of monsters, and then they get to that lobby and they hear the PA over the PA system, Sigourney Weaver, telling them, like, hey, sorry, but we kind of have to, this has to happen.
Yep.
Really? If you could just kill him now, you have that gun in your hand that he just handed you, that would be for the best. And then they get into the control booth, they get surrounded, they open all the things, and then that GIF happens.
Yep.
Not to speed things along, but, you know.
No, the... It's There's a lot of nice payoffs. They have the, before they're even going down in the elevator, they have the zombie that you think kills Marty is like eviscerated on the floor. And he's like, yeah, I had to disembowel him with a trowel or, you know, something like that. And then
that, he wasn't high enough. They didn't make him inebriated enough.
And then they're like, ah, stupid, like the arm like keeps trying to grab him. He's like, stupid zombie arm or whatever. And then the zombie arm's the thing that saves them when the first guy, like, why, like, just real briefly, why that guy whose entire job, I get it. And I get, like, why is there a giant purge button? You know, like, the reason is horror is stupid, you know, like, and it's part of the satire is, like, people in horror movies are dumb. But, like, it is funny that they're like, why don't you just shoot him? Like to the girl, like, over the thing. And it's like, you have a guy with a gun that opened a door that knew exactly what he needed to do and instead just shouted, get out of the elevator for some reason. Instead of just murking the dude, dropping the gun, and walking away. But that is horror movies, baby. And then, speaking of elevator doors, my God.
Ding. Yeah. So this whole run into that segment, any particular standouts with the other monsters? Anyone you would have wanted to see in action more?
The dismemberment goblins have a pretty good opening bit, ripping somebody in half.
Yes. Yeah.
I know, like, the big joke is the tree. You know, like, the tree has an arm reach out, and then you just see, like, shining levels of blood pour out of the elevator.
Yep.
Bree really liked the snick.
Mm.
Oh, yeah. There was a I'm looking up to see all the references, because I don't remember all of them.
Yeah.
Famously, they have the Reavers from Firefly or in Serenity, because in Serenity, they have the scene where the girl, like, it's like, what? It's like a not a video. What did CNN have for the Obama election?
They sent an Evite. Is that what you're talking about?
No, there's like, I'm going to, like, Wolf Blitzer's like, no, I'm going to.
Oh, yeah, he did like hologram shit.
Well, on hologram. it was. Right,
That was.
Remember that 10 years ago or 15 years ago?
Oh, yeah. Like, it was good times.
When we invented hologram technology.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's like a hologram of a woman who's like, the Reavers are humans. Spoiler alert for Serenity. And she tries to kill herself before they get to her, but she can't. And Joss Whedon, like, as like a bit for this one, has the girl, they're trying to breach the door, and she shoots herself on camera as kind of like a nod to that, because I think there was a lot of fan outrage that they had, because I mean, you can hear that girl screaming in the first one. It's pretty upsetting.
Yeah,
that it's supposed to. I think I heard Joss Whedon somewhere along the line say it was like a nod to like this woman's faster on the trigger, shall we say?
Yeah,
about getting done.
Unfortunately, that's the only reference in this scene.
Yeah, and that's it. Bree, you couldn't mine any other references out of that scene, could you?
Huh?
The scene with all the montage of death.
There was. Well, we went through them the other day, and there was a fuck ton. Like, even if it's just, like, a quick snippet, people have, like, pointed out a bunch of them. I forgot, I really like the Sugar Plum Fairy. I think that was just a real fun one to just kind of turn around and see.
Yes, with all the teeth.
Teeth.
That was good. They have, I like the unicorn payoff. It's a little cheap, but... It is funny to have a unicorn on the board, and then
really just stabs that guy.
Yep,
hard.
Someone gets their soul. Like I was talking to Ben, like, before we did this, we was like, how much are we gonna talk about the elevator? Because like, we only watched it through like once. I'm sure we'll go through it again. We'll probably watch that movie again at some point. But like, you could like really, you know, look at each person that gets attacked and kind of just see what happens to them. And like, some of them are pretty clean cut, like the killing robot, you know, just kind of comes out, hits them both in the head with like a razor blade or whatever. But like, there's people that travel, you know, like there's people that get knocked around. There's someone whose soul gets ripped out halfway through. Like, I think you could watch that scene once or twice and not even realize somebody lost their soul in that scene.
Yeah.
Because she just kind of grabs it and runs away immediately.
Absolutely. It's good when the shit finally hits the fan and there's a couple rounds of those elevators opening and then everything's just sort of drenched in blood from then on.
Yeah.
It's
including the characters.
It is a heck of a payoff. And this just kind of works for me. We've mentioned before that the comedy style is maybe outdated now, but I still think in this context, it plays for me, and the horror stuff all still works. And the bigger point about the staleness of the genre, I think, isn't as sharp as Scream, but because I don't think that these guys are actually horror guys the way that, you know, fucking Wes Craven was in the 90s. So I think it's not, and it's also not as specific. It's sort of just pan everything under the horror umbrella. They have, you know, weird young Japanese girl ghosts also get shout outs here, and you know, it's all in there.
The evil is defeated.
That's still good. Yeah.
I did not know that's where that gif came from. It's one of my favorites.
You were very excited when you were like, "Is the evil is defeated?" Like the
Kiko's soul will live on in this happy frog.
I want to know whether Richard Jenkins was told what he was flipping off, or if they like actually had, you know what I mean? Like, was it a green screen?
Oh, he'd go for it.
Yeah. But like, it's even more fun to realize it's like, okay, my job at work today is to scream "fuck you" 8 times at a bunch of little girls.
He delivers it with the same conviction of acting out his dreams of becoming a dinosaur.
I was literally about to say Step Brothers. It goes 3 years back to Step Brothers for that scene.
Yeah, exactly. It's just.
Sorry.
Go ahead. I don't have really anything.
I was gonna say these two guys definitely aren't like huge horror people, but I think that like Scream is super effective, but like it's very effective when it's like it's satire of like slashers. I think this one is very, very good commentary on torture porn, because usually not good horror movies. Like the first Saw is good because I haven't seen it all the way through, but like I know of it and it's very, very well written. The rest of the Saws are just straight up like, hey, you like mutilation and no other plot reason. And yet they've still made like 10 of them. And then there's just all the other just like dumb, just all it is watching people get tortured. I think with the overall also meta commentary of the Ancient Ones being horror fans and stuff like that, I think that this movie still plays into that really well.
Yeah, so it's funny. The first Saw movie comes out in 2004. Can you guess off the top of your head, either of you, how many Saw movies were out by the time this movie released?
4?
I'm going to say 3.
7.
Jeez, I knew it was a lot, but man, that means in the last like
in those 11 years
there's been 4. Oh. Damn, they front loaded.
Yeah. I was trying to remember because I remember people really like 3, and I thought, yeah,
because 10 just came out a few months ago.
Yeah,
and that was the first one in a while, I think.
Yeah, the biggest gap is there's one every year between from 2004 to 2010. There is literally one every October, and then. There's a gap 2010 to 2017.
Oh wow. Okay. Yeah.
So that accounts for that gap pretty much. Yeah. But yes, so yeah, you saying that, I was like, how many Saw movies were out by this point? And I just looked it up. It's like, yeah, there were 7 of them out.
Gotcha. Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
Years before this movie came out.
I knew there was probably a good amount. I did not know it was 7, but that just plays into it more. Definitely lots of other dumb horror tropes being made fun of in Scream, but yeah, I think Cabin in the Woods is very specifically, or not specifically, because it makes fun of other horror tropes, but the overall horror trope that it's making fun of is torture porn.
Yes, for sure. They're literally the tortures, the redneck torture zombies is what their listing is on the betting board. No, they're not. Sorry, zombies are an entirely different thing. Yep. So you don't get no payout for you. So. All that's really left to talk about in the movie is the ending. Sigourney Weaver pops out once they get down to the sort of ceremonial sacrifice room with the blood filling the different outlines of the archetypes. And Sigourney Weaver shows up and explains the rest that hasn't been explained yet, I guess. And there's a tense standoff. Fran Kranz, Marty, doesn't tell the final girl she's about to get bitten by a werewolf. Yep. Which I remember the girl of the redneck torture family showing up. I forgot that there's a werewolf there first too.
A weird choice, but maybe that was a reference to something. Like, I don't mean to just, I've talked about this before where it's like there's stuff like Succession and like other satirical shows that it's like if I feel like that there's a misstep, I think, oh, I probably messed up, versus like shows like Game of Thrones where you're like, no, they definitely messed up. This is their fault.
Yeah, Danny just forgot about the Iron Fleet.
Oh my god. Can't believe they did that. Like, why even have those after episode things if you're gonna say something that dumb? Anyway. But yeah, it is, I actually do want to talk about a little bit before that, if you don't mind. While that's happening, like right before that, they kind of, at the end of the Purge, all the major underground characters kind of get murked in order, and the bodyguard guy has the heroic death, and they pay off the merman. I have two quick things to say about that. One, the merman thing is cool. Like, it's a fun moment. You know, they have the scene earlier where Chris Hemsworth is about to activate the merman and something else gets activated, and he's like, I've never seen a merman. And then Richard Jenkins
was holding the conch in his hand.
And Richard Jenkins goes, oh, they're a mess to clean up. You know, like, he's trying to like talk them down from it. Like, it's not fun. Like, this will be fun. Like torture zombies are going to be easier to clean up after. But
100% clear is right.
Yep. he gets killed by the merman and it starts squirting blood everywhere through his blowhole, and it's gross. The girl, I want to talk about that. They have this girl as one of the main four people. She's in the beginning scene of the movie. She's like the director of the chem department, and she's kind of like being played up as a cynical person. And she gets killed by just kind of getting grabbed by a tentacle through the ceiling.
Yeah.
And that's it. And it's like, I don't think she needs like a huge payoff or anything, but it just seemed like such an abrupt, like, oh, we forgot to kill her. And it's like, I almost feel like they, by accident, I don't think this was on purpose. Maybe it was, but I think by accident, they kind of, did some satire for the nowadays. Cause like, I look at that and go, do I think that Joss Whedon writes women characters that well? Not really. You know, like, I think he's, at the very least, you could say he's very flawed with a lot of his characters. And to just be like, oh shit, we forgot to kill her. I don't know. Let's just have a tentacle grab her through the ceiling. Like, no, you know, Bradley Whitford gets a whole payoff. The other guy gets a heroic death. Richard Jenkins gets literally killed by Dagonus. Yeah. And she's just literally an afterthought. And that kind of bothered me. But in some other ways, I'm like, that makes sense. Like, they didn't write her enough to give her a thing. All they had to do was give her a thing. Maybe they had to cut something, but I don't think they did.
Yeah, it makes sense. It's her and Richard Jenkins are about to escape, seemingly, through that hatch, which doesn't work out for either of them.
No. but yeah, so to go back, they get down to the thing, director's saying all this stuff.
Good performance from Sigourney.
Yeah.
Just love Brie to see her.
Big pop from Brie when Sigourney showed up.
I was so happy when she came out.
She does have a very identifiable voice, and you do hear it over the PA system before that, but it doesn't necessarily feel like a movie that Sigourney Weaver's in.
Yep.
So I doubt that I picked up, oh, that's Sigourney Weaver's voice the first time you hear it over the loudspeakers. So,
yeah, it was very much like, what a GLaDOS-esque, you know, like, not voice cadence, but like, hey, we're just going to need you to die. Like, could you just die? You know, like, type take.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder, I don't know. I don't know why she's there, but it's good to see her. She's great.
What is the meaning of Prentice, the zombie Prentice, right? Something like that. Or Patience. It's not Prentice.
Patience.
Yeah. I don't know where I got Prentice from. Patience comes down with an axe. Like, she's kind of been wobbling the whole movie. I don't think she's killed anybody up to that point.
Yeah.
And she stabs Sigourney Weaver in the back and then gets kicked down into the ancients. Was there a meaning to that I kind of missed? Because I couldn't really think of.
I never took it as a deeper meaning, more just like, here is an identifiable monster that you've sort of seen for a while.
Yeah. So kind of like like, this could go bad, you know, like.
Also the kind of the full revenant thing that they walk slow, but they're always walking after you. So It Follows does that too. And when I said the revenant thing, I literally meant the way mechanically the monster revenants work in Dungeons and Dragons 5th edition.
not the Leonardo DiCaprio movie.
Right. Yeah. They literally, like, whatever their target is, they follow it. So she's walking slow, but she's walking that direction the whole time. And she's trying to kill Marty.
Yeah, I wasn't sure. Like, maybe by that point, I was looking way too into every single little thing. But I was like, is this supposed to be like some kind of discussion that the horror genre want? Like, as a whole, you know, like the monsters within the horror genre deserve better, so they're trying to kill, you know, the machinations that makes them bad. I'm like, that seems too deep.
Maybe. But, Maybe they had that thought.
They get kicked to the audience again. Sorry, the ancient ones, who definitely are the audience, demanding better movies or whatever. But I do really like the ending. I love after the director and patients are dispatched, and it's just the two of them as the temple's kind of crumbling, and the main girl, Dana, I don't think I've said her character's name either. Dana says, like, oh, Chris Hemsworth, like, because the whole, like, it intro is that Chris Hemsworth has a cousin that's renting this cabin. And she's like, he doesn't even have a cousin, which I don't remember from the first time watching it. I was like, that's a really good, that's a really good line.
Yeah.
Why did we believe
that? Their conversation at the end is good, and it's recalling a lot of things. I mentioned last week when we did a Carpenter movie that has a similar ending to a lot of my favorite Carpenter movies have an ending where it's like, actually, the world's not worth saving, so fuck it. And this has the similar vibe, and it recalls the end of The Thing also, with the two characters talking to each other and just being like, yeah, we're fucked, but maybe it's fine.
Movies don't end sad enough. Like, in those contexts, like, not everything has to be a heroic, not everything in horror has to be a heroic overcome. Not everything in horror has to be like the last second. Like, I'm trying to think of like movies, not necessarily like, obviously I'm fine with a horror movie that wants to have a sequel doing like the reach through the ground esque like stinger. But like, I feel like there's a lot of horror movies that always do that. Just kidding, they all died. Like, Final Destination loves doing that, where it's like the epilogue scene and then it's like, oh, just kidding, we killed everybody, or like the main person died. Like, it is sometimes just fine to have the bad guy win. I know that famously Jeepers Creepers does that, and I think a lot of people like the ending of Jeepers Creepers because Justin Long just gets super murked at the end of that movie. Yeah. Again, spoilers for Justin Long.
There's a promise in the title of that film that hasn't been fulfilled until the end. So.
Yes, that is true.
So it makes sense. But yeah, no, you're totally right. And it does feel also for this movie, for the point it's making, yes, burn it all down because it all sucks, is very much in keeping with the tone of the point that it's been trying to make. But Brie, for a first time watch, how'd you feel about the ending?
I love the absurdity of it. Like, I love that the fact that it just ends with a giant fucking arm just destroying everything and screen going black. Like, it's just so absurd. Like, I haven't seen a lot, because I don't really like apocalypse movies or anything like that. The only other movie that I've seen that ends similarly, Don't Look Up is bad, so we're not talking about that one. But Speaking for a Friend for the End of the World, something like that, I think it's called. Steve Carell and Keira Knightley. It's like a romance comedy drama. It wasn't that good, but I remember being really existential at the end, because it's literally just everyone's freaking out because an asteroid's gonna hit Earth and it's like imminent, and these two people just kind of become friends, and then it gets romantic, and then it literally ends with them laying in bed kind of grateful that they found each other when they did, and then the screen just going white because the asteroid hits. Insane.
Ooh, yeah, but yeah, I think, you know, an era finality is nice. It's funny. I had a thread about Cabin in the Woods open from I think the horror subreddit, and the first comment is like, I know they probably won't, but I'd love a sequel to explore the world in this one.
Oh my god!
I think you stopped watching a couple seconds before the credits, bud. I'm not sure. Yeah, it's just some big monsters hanging out, I guess, is the
ancient ones take over again.
They do have that line where they say it would have been nice to see them. You know, or something like that.
Yeah, like, he's like, I know, right? Yeah, it would have been.
I wonder if that's even like an in joke to like, maybe they ran out of budget money, like they couldn't CG, they wanted to CGI the monsters and then couldn't. But maybe
I feel like that would have made it a worse ending.
Yeah, I do like, yeah, the hand slam is good. It's quick.
It's the master hand just.
Yeah. All right. So I think that's about it on the movie. You want to get into ratings?
Yep.
Cool. On a scale of 0.5 to 5, on any scale of your choosing aside from stars, what would you give Drew Goddard's 2011-ish, 2012 release, The Cabin in the Woods?
You have?
I don't have a thing. I haven't even, for some reason, I didn't even think of a thing.
There is more objects than usual in this one.
Five out of five moose heads.
Whatever that mystical beast is. Or magical beast, or whatever he says.
Yeah, it's. I probably, if I would have talked about this 10 years ago, I probably would have thought 3.5, maybe a 4. Now I think I'm gonna go 4.5. So I'm gonna go 4.5. Dancing, singing Japanese children out of.
Happy frogs.
Happy frogs. That would have been a better one, but I said what I said.
No, I like yours better. It's sweatier. I like it. Yeah, now I'm feeling like I need to rise to the occasion and pick a really good one, but I can't. I'm bad at it. I'll explain why in a second. So 4.5 out of 5 witches flying in front of the moon. So there is an infamous review of this movie by like an old tenured critic. I forget their name. I forget where it's from. But if you Google Cabin in the Woods, witches flying in front of the moon review, that probably gets you there, in which the critic gives it an extremely low rating and then describes a bunch of things they didn't like about it that explicitly didn't happen in the movie, including like witches flying in front of the moon is a line that stands out to me. And this was like kind of before commentary, but I'm sure you can find people mentioning this on some subreddit somewhere, because at the time I found people making fun of this person clearly fell asleep or something and then complained that the movie didn't make any sense. And then
they probably thought it was going to be safe. Like, oh, it's a horror movie, I'll just give it a bad rating and say it doesn't make sense. And then like everyone will agree with me and I'll make my money.
Yes. So in reviewing it, I want to reference that review of a person who did a bad review.
There you go.
I cannot find this review.
Damn it. That's too bad. Oh, man. I hope I didn't make it up.
Dunk on that person who doesn't exist.
The ultimate straw man argument. Detailing a thing that doesn't exist in excruciating amounts of time. Whatever. It's something. Yeah, no, this exists. I'm pretty confident.
If you find it, link it, because I would definitely want to read it. But I'm still searching for it.
Okay.
I just love the concept of him being like, I hate the witches in front of the moon. It's like, ah, that scene went by so fast. Everyone, no one will call me on that.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, TiVo exists. Oh, no.
Yeah. Whatever. I can't find it either. But I only looked for a few seconds. So the question I asked Anthony last week, and normally throughout the month, I get a better question going, and I just couldn't think of a great one for this theme of one night only. And so I think we went with like, what's a situation that you think you could handle in the course of a night? Or a situation you could see yourself in that would lend itself to a film adaptation that takes place in one night?
I don't think I could handle anything like a Most Dangerous Game situation, but I've always been curious. If I like what I would do if I was in one, you know, like if you're like in the woods or something. Yeah. Maybe that's actually, maybe a better example is actually like a Survivor Man thing. I used to watch Survivor Man and say I would love to do Survivor Man if there was a button I could hit to get out immediately. Like, it wasn't like we have to send in a helicopter to save this guy from this remote island. It's like I just hit a button and it immediately just teleported back to like my bed or something.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I'm an Eagle Scout. I feel like if I was like lost in the woods, if it wasn't like absolutely terrible, I could probably figure out how to get out of there using like the sky and like general knowledge of how to survive. But I'm also terrible with directions. So
yeah, that'd be tough for me. I think I'm bad at all of that.
That was a terrible answer. Bree, you got a better answer?
I've been trying to think. I feel like I would do well with like most haunted house scenarios. Like for legitimate haunted houses, I feel like I'd be good at surviving the night.
So a little house on Haunted Hill, you know, you get some amount of money for staying here overnight situation.
Yeah, I think I'd be able to win the money at the end.
Or like your brother's trapped in a mansion and you need to use the ghost vacuum you just got from a mad scientist to steal up Luigi's Mansion.
Yeah.
Luigi's Mansion.
Yeah. I got it immediately.
I've never actually played those. So I was like, wait, what the fuck are you talking about?
Ben got it at your brother.
Turns out the mansion was just an illusion. You ended up with some shitty tent at the end of it.
Yep.
But you should know, like, you're not a very lucky person. You shouldn't have ever thought you won this contest in the
first place. Yeah. But yeah, I don't think there's much I could deal with. I think it would have to be a positive situation for me to deal, quote unquote, deal with it. I think I was talking about how the minute when they walk into the movie, there's like a ritualistic sacrifice painting that, like, kind of the bit is that they take it down immediately and there's a two-way or a one-way mirror on the other side of it. Or I guess it's two-way on one side and one-way on the other. I was like, the minute I saw that painting, I'd just leave. And then Bree was like, well, you came in an RV. So I was like, I think I'd just sleep in the RV. Like, I don't know. I wouldn't want to be in that house. Like,
yeah.
Too creepy.
The RV probably has more lockable entrances than that house would.
It's drivable. So if someone starts attacking me, you know, I
mean, the zombies got into the RV.
That is true. We very much know that one zombie got in there. So.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I don't know. Game night situation, if you kidnap me, I can figure
it out. Anthony said game night.
Yeah. Yeah, if I had to do something, game night probably. Bodies, 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 I'd be great at because I get killed right away, so I wouldn't have to worry about it. I'd be Pete Davidson in that situation. So
it's on Netflix now, so I need to recommend it to everyone for who hasn't seen it yet.
Yeah.
How about you, Ben? What did you say last time?
I think I agree that like a game night, but just like playing board games overnight would be fun.
It's the toughest thing.
But what if the board games were haunted?
Yeah, honestly, the most daunting part of that is the social anxiety of not inviting a neighbor. Who's questioning the you know, how could that possibly be profitable for Frito-Lay? My favorite line delivery in any film in the last like 20 years. Anyway, I think that just about does it for us. Thanks, Sam and Bree, for joining for Cabin in the Woods. I had a good time. Good movie. Yeah, good to revisit. Movie.
Yes, it was very good.
You can find our stuff on Linktree. linktr.ee/late-to-the-movies. And thanks.
You're welcome. I'm going to Anthony my way out of here and just leave.
Okay, sounds good.
Bye.
Bye.